Welcome to Nosecast. Homilies delivered in the Holy Gnosis of Thomas Chapel, the Ecclesia Gnostica, in Salt Lake City, Utah, by the Reverend Troy Pierce.
Well, today is the Sunday after Ascension Day, and today we put out the candle that has been symbolizing for us with its light the presence of Christ for 40 days after Easter. This is all part of the traditional story, part of the canonical scriptures, part of the larger Christian tradition. And in this story, or this chapter of the story, which is almost the last chapter of the Easter story, the Lord returns, the Lord is there. The disciples discover the Lord after crucifixion and entombment. They realize that there is still a presence there. It's not a walking around vivified body of Jesus, because it's a bit strange, hard to recognize, or shifting in form, or walking through walls. So literal interpretation, the physical literal, just doesn't work. There was an intensification of this experience, because these apostles, the disciples, had gone through, in a much more intense way, the story that we attempt to go through today. We use as kind of a story pilgrimage in our lives and in our practice. They went through the triumphal procession, Palm Sunday, the Last Supper, Good Friday, a period of in between when all seemed lost after the crucifixion. Some of the gospel accounts say that the disciples scattered, that they went back to Galilee. They weren't around in Jerusalem after the crucifixion. That it was the female disciples that stayed. And that it was, in most of the accounts, specifically Mary of Magdala, who had an experience of Christ after the crucifixion, the death, the entombment. And that she spread this news. At least it was the women, in all accounts, that had this encounter. And in our earliest canonical gospel, Mark, there's a directive, you know, go and tell the disciples in Galilee this has happened, and there's no indication that they did. And of course, the earliest version of Mark, there isn't this after-crucifixion continuation of the story. There is, in this tradition, an understanding of the presence of Christ that occurred sort of spontaneously among these people. That there were visions, experiences of an intense nature that were considered to be worthwhile to share among this community. And that these experiences, at least to certain elements of this community, were as important as whatever happened before the crucifixion. If you think about it, without filters of Christian Orthodox history in your eyes, it makes sense. Because if you see a guy walking around, well, it's a guy walking around, right? You might perceive in that person a greater degree of wisdom, a greater degree of spirituality, of insight. You may even see within them the divine. But you're never quite sure that it's not just your own inner divinity projected upon them, or them sort of embodying something for you, being charismatic. Lots of charismatic leaders that we are aware of in our history that are in no way connected to the divine as we know it, at least nothing good going on there. And so, Jesus' movement is usually referred to, the people who were followers of Jesus when he was alive. Well, it was this one kind of experience, but it was the kind of experience you can kind of, you know, seeing a person sitting there talking is the kind of experience you can have with every person that's alive. It's not exactly unique. And while the words that person is teaching or saying, or the insight that person has may be profound, the experience itself is pretty mundane. We see people all the time, unless we're in solitary confinement or something. Not that big a deal. But to have these experiences of somebody, you know, in the form of a person who's dead, have these experiences of the divine coming through that form, and to receive further teachings, to have further instruction, to have further insight delivered to oneself in that way, that's got a pretty big wow factor, I'd think. You had even a dream of this figure. That's more, that's something. That's not merely seeing a human out there in the world. That's having an encounter, perhaps with the divine in oneself, having that encounter inwardly, with the inner eye, with the mystic eye, and having that contain that pneumatic character, that character of the spirit, so you can feel it right there. Have that enlightening presence within oneself. And be certain what that is. It's not that maybe you're being bamboozled by some charismatic preacher out there in the world. You are having this direct encounter with the divine in this form, in your own experience, in your own understanding. That's much more profound in its, shall we say, essential nature. The teachings may or may not be more profound. That's the content. But the means of conveyance is much more profound. From having a person tell you this stuff to really experiencing, having a spiritual experience in which insights and realizations occur. And this appears to be a real historical experience. Even those who, for their own reasons, generally I would say cultural and psychological, doubt the existence of a historical figure of Christ, they don't doubt that people were having these spiritual experiences. This is one of those interesting, almost paradoxes, that you can doubt that there was a physical person walking around called Jesus, but you cannot doubt that people were having inner spiritual experiences of the figure Christ. Again, this points to the difference in that means of conveyance. Having it conveyed as a spiritual experience is much more profound. In the Gnostic tradition, a lot of the texts focus on this figure as the living Christ. And there are Gospels that consist of revelations, of teachings by this figure, the living Christ, to one disciple or another. And that these are given authority. You know, these aren't just thought of, well, what were you smoking there? You know, what were you smoking, Mary? Were those magic mushrooms you were taking, Philip? You know, these were given real authority because they came from real experience. And then the content of the teachings were conveyed. And whether or not you had a literal perspective on what happened, well, it's up to you. But the spiritual value of these things, value as a means of understanding and attaining gnosis, were apparent. In the more orthodox canonical story, this is a period of 40 days. However, in Gnostic texts, this is a period much longer than 40 days. There are texts that speak about years. Indeed, if we look at the narrative stories that are in some of the Gospels of a Gnostic nature, like the Gospel of Mary, there's no timeline given. This could have been years afterwards. The setting of the story is that telling of a vision of Christ she encounters, that she doesn't shrink away from. And as, you know, the Christ in the vision says, it's good that you do not shrink away from, that you accept this vision. And in our own experience as Gnostics, that's where our emphasis lies. The mystical emphasis that exists within Orthodox tradition would say, well, be very careful about that experience, or if it ever should call into question any of that teaching, opinion, belief, assertions that are correct, which is the literal meaning of orthodoxia, correct opinion, correct belief, correct assertions. If it ever goes against that, then throw out, chuck out the experience. Chuck out that spiritual experience. Throw it away. Gnostic perspective, that doxia, that opinion, that assertion, isn't as important as that experience. And the knowledge one gains from that experience, that is gnosis. That inner spiritual experience. The experience one encounters, you know, encountering Christ within oneself, you get more than a list of sayings or a sermon of Christ or something. you have more in that experience than can be written down, can be conveyed in that way. And that more, a lot of that is gnosis, that you recognize Christ. These post-resurrection appearances, the disciples frequently have trouble recognizing Christ. It isn't until something happens that they finally go, oh, this person I've been talking to, this person I've been walking on the road, you know, having a good old chat about this and that with, oh, that person is Christ. Or with the story of Mary Magdalene that sees a person, thinks it's a gardener, and finally, when the figure speaks, realizes, oh, that's Christ. And that O, oh, if we can be a bit facetious, is the O of gnosis. That recognition, that acquaintanceship, is an element, is an aspect, the manifestation of gnosis. As the Greeks understood the difference between different types of knowing, that is gnosis. And if you have that experience, then you aren't merely asserting Christ. You aren't merely saying, well, there was this guy, he taught these things, he did this stuff, believe in him, you'll be saved. Honest. Double your money back at the gates of hell if you... if I'm wrong. Like the Bob Dobbs guarantee of the Church of the Subgenius, you know. If you end up going to hell, Bob Dobbs will be there at the gates of hell to write you a check for double your money back, if that should occur. But if you have this experience, it isn't merely hearing about this Christ guy walking around. It's merely believing in this figure, in this story, in a lot of things about this figure in this story, that they're salvific, that they will lead you to a deeper understanding. It's not mere assertion anymore. You've encountered him. It's not like, you know of many people, but you only know a few people. It's the very same way. To know of is doxia. It's having that orthodox kind of thing. There is opinion assertion that's considered correct, but you don't have an experience of it. You don't have a knowledge from that experience. So you don't really know that person. You might not even recognize that person in the crowd, as you've heard about him, you don't know. And so, to rest a religious tradition upon an opinion or insertion is kind of a weak and flimsy thing to do. It's apparently worked for a couple thousand years. Let's not be wrong about that. But part of the reason why it's worked is that there's been a lot of cultural, political, and so forth force behind it, this assertion of authority, the authority of the ortho part of the doxia. That this is indeed correct, authoritative, true opinion. A lot of work went in to convince people of this. Gnostics were never really convinced that much. These experiences, these things that they recognized in the teaching as being true, having these experiences and recognizing these figures that are in the story, knowing them directly, not merely knowing about them, knowing of them, were what gave the Gnostics their foundation. And in Gnostic tradition, as I mentioned before, this period of the experience of Christ went on for quite some time. The Gospel today is from Pistis Sophia, and it's speaking about Christ having completed giving the first mystery to the disciples, and then rising up into heaven, ascending into heaven, and the earth shaking and the heavens shaking. This being a very important, very overwhelming experience for all of them. Well, if we think of these things in the literal physical sense, we have Christ going up, up, and away, flying up into heaven. And that's not the best example of a paradigm. It's pretty close. The difference of an ancient paradigm, ancient understanding of the cosmos, was kind of a three-story affair. You had the underworld, you had the world, and you had the heavens. And so if someone were to ascend, they would be going up towards the heavens. And even though the heavens were not merely a single, shall we say, level or power by this time in antiquity, they were a rather complicated thing. There was an understanding as manifest in astrology, in mythology, that there are different spheres of influence, different planetary influences, different elements of the houses of the zodiac, the heavens. And that to ascend was to move through this realm. That's a different paradigm, a different way of looking at this than we do today. Remember who wrote the book decades ago? You know, and he's still flying away now. You know, the fact that if Christ literally was a revivified body of Jesus, flying up at escape velocity, shall we say, still be, you know, making his way out of the local area of the galaxy here. Wouldn't be to wherever heaven might be in this more astronomical scheme of things. And so that doesn't make sense. It is truly laughable. But if we look at the paradigm in which the people conveyed this story, their understanding of the story, what they meant, what they understood, what they experienced, then we have something different. We have an ascension that is moving above the world, that is superior to it, a superior perspective. It is moving out of the realm of the earthly powers into the realm of these more cosmic powers and forces, and beyond them. And that this ascension is really a transcendent element, transcendent voyage, movement. So that to rise up, in a sense, isn't to physically take an elevator to the sky, but it's to transcend the limitations one finds oneself in this world. To pass beyond these machinations of the cosmos, really these machine gears, if you will, the powers of the cosmos, powers of the universe. Transcend all of this and move beyond it to the transcendent source, to the fullness of God, the fullness of the divine. And this is the movement that we are to emulate. For as Gnostics, we don't merely want to believe in Christ, not merely have a correct opinion or belief about this figure of Christ. To follow Christ, to be disciples ourselves, to follow. And so as a part of coming to this last part of this pilgrimage through the story of Christ that began before but intensified during Holy Week, this is in a way the penultimate chapter of that story, this ascension. We are to understand that as calling upon us to go through a similar process, not a bodily process, not even a post-mortem process necessarily. They'll certainly want to be prepared for that as well. But these other ascensions that are spoken of in different scriptures, most widely elaborated in the Hermetic vein, of ascending, of going beyond the limitations of this world, transcending limitations, going there. This lesson for today from the Chaldean oracles speaks of, imagine yourself being free of the body and you are. That you can go through this experience here and now. You can have this ascension experience. It won't be the end. It won't be all there is. You'll come back. You'll live. You'll move on. But this is a part of a spiritual exercise of transcending. And this is an exercise practiced by the Hermetic tradition, by the Gnostic tradition. We see clues to it, if not outright examples of it, all over the place. And so if we avail ourselves of that guidance, if we are able to have a spiritual practice and move beyond the mere limitations of ego mind, of ego body, and have a gnosis and experience beyond that. And that is salvific. That is redemptive. That is redemptive for us while we are here. It will change our lives, and it will be a transformation that leads to our ultimate liberation from the cosmos itself. So today, while it is, at least for me, rather sad to no longer have a physical symbol of the light of Christ, and to see the conclusion of this chapter of the story in our yearly practice, it is by no means closing of that book. It is merely that we are shifting emphasis to the final chapter and then to other things. But in a large extent, this is the period, this is the part of the story we will always be in. If we have an experience of Christ, we focus on that gnosis, on that spiritual development and growth. If we practice the spiritual exercises of ascension, then this is where we are in the story. We are in the presence of the light of Christ, for this is not an end. The light of Christ is there. Presence of Christ is there. It may be harder for us now to contact that. But that is our limitation, not the limitation of the divine. If we open our hearts, if we reach towards the light, it will be there, fervently waiting for us, wishing for us to do so. So may the mystery of that which hangs twixt heaven and earth descend upon us and remain with us always. Information and resources on Gnosticism, visit the Gnosis Archive at gnosis.org. That's GNOSIS.ORG. And the Gnosis Institute at gnosisinstitute.org. If you'd like to continue receiving these podcasts, please consider a voluntary subscription of either $13 or $25 a year. That's $1 to $2 a month to make it possible to continue to provide this service. Thank you.